Back together again, you and I gathering around the radio Thursday, February 2nd, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We chatted with Trumbull restaurateur and GOP State Rep Dave Ritigliano on the possible elimination of Connecticut's so-called sub-minimum wage for tipped workers. University of New Haven criminal justice professor Dr. Lorenzo Boyd offered his thoughts on the Tyre Nichols beating case in Memphis. And Stratford Democratic State Rep Joe Gresko, chair of the General Assembly's Environment Committee, outlined his committee's priorities for the current legislative session. You were probably familiar, especially those that have worked in the restaurant business, of what is called, you know, the tipped minimum wage, or I guess what's technically referred to as the sub-minimum wage, meaning if you work in a restaurant and you're a server or a bartender and you get tips, generally, you're paid a lower base wage because you get tips, and a lot of folks that do that actually make out pretty good. Usually, they've told me. I was never a server in a restaurant, especially a busy one. Well, there's a bill being introduced now by the majority Democrats in the General Assembly to get rid of that sub-minimum wage for restaurateurs in the state, to make that person or those servers or bartenders be paid the regular minimum wage, and then I guess make tips. A lot of people are saying it's a great idea. Folks in the business are saying, hey, wait a minute, what's the point here? Is anybody really complaining about this? Welcoming back, he was on a few days ago. We brought him back because he is a restaurateur, besides being in the General Assembly, Republican State Rep Dave Ritigliano of Trumbull. Hey, Dave, good afternoon. It's Paul again. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good, Dave. Thanks for taking the time again to join us on short notice. So, Dave, you're a state legislator. You watch these things, and you're in the restaurant business. People know that. What do you have any idea what the impetus is beyond this?
Yes.
Is okay? Go ahead.
Well, I also served on the labor committee for the past 8 years, mm-hmm. so I'm very aware of the issue. First of all, we need to clarify something. There is no such thing as sub-minimum wage in Connecticut. If you do not make a combination of your hourly wage and tips at least the minimum wage every hour, mm-hmm. then you must be at least be paid the minimum wage. So there is nobody out there actually making less than minimum wage for any hour worked. That's first. Second of all, I don't the chairs and some of the people in the labor committee fundamentally don't understand how the hospitality industry works. Tips are an essential part of the business. The workers are looking forward to them. It allows them to work less hours and make the exact same money as somebody with an eight-hour day. If you ask most of the servers and bartenders, they are ecstatic at making tips. They prefer to make tips than over even a good hourly wage. So that's usually how it goes. And just so you know, all tips are fully taxable as income. So the state doesn't even lose out on the deal.
So this, Dave, sounds to me, is there a logic behind this? Is this proposal just kind of out there because we can? You know what I mean? Why this push right now? What's behind it?
It is definitely a part of just because we can. The chairs, the people in charge on the labor committee have something against the hospitality industry. They've sort of called us in the past slaveholders. They've used much inflammatory language to describe how we operate our business. I don't think the legislation they propose would only hurt the people they're supposed to be helping. I fundamentally don't believe that they understand what's going on. A lot of this is driven by a union and socialist agenda. And they're coming after us.
Controversy now in Hartford. Should the state do away with a lower minimum wage, which is called the tipped minimum wage? You know what we're talking about, right? If you've ever worked in a restaurant or a bar and you get tips, you make a less minimum wage, which, again, though, according to state law, is evened out if the math shows you haven't made minimum wage. But again, there's an effort to pull this off the books by some Democratic leadership in Hartford and made all even for the sake of we don't know, because there's already a, as we said earlier, a guaranteed minimum wage. Republican State Rep Dave Ritigliano, who's also a restaurateur and sits on the Labor Committee, continues to discuss this with us. Dave, you know, I said yesterday, talking about this the past couple of days on the show, one thing I think that would be bad about this. Now, Dave, I always tip well. I love people to wait on me. It's a tough job. You know how tough it is with the people you hire and supervise. You know there are going to be some people out there, Dave, that if this is implemented, they're going to say, hey, I read in the news they make a higher wage now. So you know what? I used to tip really well, but I'm going to hold back a little bit. That's just a gut feeling I have, Dave. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am. But people being people, I don't know, Dave. This doesn't sound good for that.
Oh, yeah, I believe you would be right entirely. I actually think as the law states right now that a tip is a relationship between the customer and the server. The owners of a restaurant or the managers of a restaurant cannot get involved with that. We can't collect it. We can't disperse it. It really is between the two of them. If the server is making full minimum wage or even above minimum wage, that is no longer the case. Restaurants could switch to a service charge model where, say, a server makes $20 an hour and you charge a service charge, the restaurant does. At that point, the restaurant can redistribute that money any way they so choose because the server is making above or at or above the minimum wage. So I think this absolutely detrimentally hurts servers. You know, you got to think of your average server. Mm-hmm. They come in 3-4 hours a shift. Ours average about $29, $30 an hour. I mean, you would probably have to work an 8-hour day to equal what somebody's making in 3 or 4 hours. It's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and David,
but really, they're hurting the people they're pretending to help.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say it's maddening because, like you said earlier before the break, this sounds like a you-know-what contest. Because if you run the numbers, why would you want to take money out of the people's hands that you purportedly are trying to help? It just doesn't make any sense. Unless, Dave, we go back to what you said, and it's just kind of a political, you know, society thing. Evil, rich restaurant owner versus some poor, downtrodden server. And the servers are not exactly having their arms twisted to work in restaurants.
That's true. So, you know, I think what they believe is that the servers are going to actually make full minimum wage plus tips. I would argue that there may be a couple of people that do that out there, but I agree with you. I think once consumers get wind of it, that the tipping is going to reduce. I mean, that's just the case. The whole basis of tipping, tips, to ensure proper service, is a reward for good service. It's part of the dining experience. It's an American tradition. It is part of our culture.
Do you find, Dave, and the guest, his restaurateur and Republican state rep, Dave Rattigliano of Trumbull, do you find that the people that you work with, Dave, and that your outlets work with, I mean, they understand the tipping thing, right? Part of it, I would think, is why they choose to be a waiter or waitress or server. They may know the base wage is lower, but they're in there because, right, they know that on a good day or a good night or a good restaurant or bar, they can really make some serious bank.
I'm telling you, God is my witness, the vast majority of my employees, when they get their paper check, it's zero because they've made so much money in tips that they need all that hourly wage to pay the taxes. That's wow. How well they're doing. For the most part, on average, if you balance out an entire week, they're doing very, very well.
So what happens, Dave? Is this the kind of bill? What does your gut feeling tell you? And I don't know the process of this, but will this come to a committee vote? Is this just one of those bills that, okay, we'll introduce it, but we don't expect to bring it to a floor vote or get it out of committee? Where does it stand right now?
Well, the chairs, the people in charge of the Labor Committee are committed leftists. I think for sure this will come for a vote. They really believe in this stuff. The chair is a senator who used to work for the unions. She just has a different perspective on things, and she controls the process.
See, Dave, that's what bothers me. You have people in Hartford, and look, God bless you people that go there. You know, it's a task to get elected. I really think, Dave, that everybody on both sides of the aisle goes there with trying to get to the same goals. We just want to get there differently. But it really upsets me, Dave, and I don't care whether it's being a restaurant person or I know there are law enforcement officers there in the General Assembly. I know there are, you know, contractors and people with teaching backgrounds. It just frosts me off, Dave, that you have people who make decisions on various industries who've never gone even near working on them or filling out a payroll or making sure that their staffing level is proper. I think that's the problem, Dave, is that, well, I know this because I've done the research. Research, that's nothing, right?
Listen, the beauty of a citizen legislature is we all get to bring our backgrounds to the table up here. We all bring a unique perspective, and it should all be listened to. But there are some, not all, that have forgotten that they're still not working for certain organizations that they worked for before. And that is just the reality of the situation. It is generally true with the Labor Committee. It has been for quite some time. And it's a struggle that we all have to come over. They fundamentally don't understand a different industry. And instead of taking the time to learn, they just impose their ideology onto it.
All right, Dave Articliano. Dave, state rep, Republican, Trumbull, also in the restaurant business. Dave, we thank you. Take care, my friend.
Be well. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Now, look, a lot of you people may say, well, what do you expect him to say? He's in the restaurant business. Well, that's precisely why you should listen to him. Now, who would know more about this? A guy who deals with this on a weekly basis or a day-to-day basis, or some legislative committee chair who, from what I understand, or chairs, have no experience in the business, but maybe just kowtowing to the AFL-CIO. Now, has there been a great groundswell to do this? Other states have. But again, I am fully of the if it ain't broke, don't fix it mode. How many of us have family members, friends, maybe growing up when we were in high school or college that were servers or waitresses or waiters or waitresses? You can't even say that now. That's sexist. Servers. You know, I used to have friends tell me, I said, well, how do you like working there? Well, I only make, you know, two and change an hour. I said, really? But they would say, yeah, but the tips are great, man. Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, you know, or, you know, happy hour. Man, I make up for it in 2 or 3 days. So there. But again, please, you legislators, stop thinking you're an expert on something. Or if you're not, admit it and listen to the people who are. But too often, in our legislative process, they get pressured by the unions and pressured by the business groups and pressure here and pressure there. See, again, this is reason number 436, why I could not be in the legislature. Because I would sit there in a committee meeting and saying, Madam Chairperson, with all due respect, you're giving me all this political theory on this and this labor theory, while we have a member here on this committee who was in the restaurant business, and he says you have no idea what you're talking about. And they'd wheel me out. They'd send the Capitol Police in. Hey, what happened to Representative Pacelli? Well, he's not with us anymore. The last time we spoke to our next guest was, as I recalled, in the wake of the George Floyd coming up on 3 years ago at police hands. We welcome back in another really tragic situation, Dr. Lorenzo Boyd. He is the Stewart Professor in Criminal Justice and Community Policing at the University of New Haven, a nationally recognized leader in police community relations and an authority on urban policing. Once again, Dr. Boyd, Paul here at WICC. Good to speak with you. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. It'd be nice to talk to you if there wasn't a massive thing happening.
This doesn't seem to make any sense, Dr. Boyd. No high-speed chase, no claim of a gun showed, no claim that the young man here who died was aggressive with his vehicle. What are your thoughts with your experience and looking at this video? I mean, this is just weird.
Well, let's take a couple of steps back. The Scorpion unit in Memphis is not unique to Memphis, mm-hmm. because they have many major police departments have these anti-crime or anti-gang type units. Sometimes they're called Scorpion, sometimes they're called Spider, and most famously, LAPD had their crash unit. So we have these crime suppression units, and a lot of times a mayor or a city manager will yell at the police chief to say crime rates are going up. Mm. You need to suppress crime. And the police chief will get their command staff and they'll put together a unit. And a lot of times the way it's supposed to work is good officers that are trying to do the right thing go out to suppress crime. But sometimes, just sometimes, you see that these police officers get overly zealous and get too aggressive. And part of that is a lack of good supervision, because if there were a good sergeant there, because this clearly isn't the first time this happened. It wouldn't have escalated like that if this was the first time. So that's also a matter of bad immediate supervision.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly looked like, Dr. Boyd, again, absent the allegation of, well, he pointed a gun at us, or he wouldn't pull over, or, you know, we thought he had a knife or something. Yeah, it certainly looked like, and maybe determination is the wrong word for me to use, but it certainly looked like there was no modulation of what they were trying to do here, if we can understand what exactly they were trying to do. I mean, this guy didn't exactly fit the description or the actions of some hardened gang leader here.
Exactly. To me, this looked personal. And I have no reason for knowing one way or the other, but it would not surprise me if one or more of the officers were familiar with Tyree Nichols. And when he got stopped, he kept asking, why did you stop me? I did nothing wrong. You guys are doing a lot. Why are you doing this? And then the first chance he got from having what he believed was an unlawful beating, he started to run. And that's what triggered the other officers. It was like blood in the water for sharks. And the one thing I can tell you, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court just had a ruling a few years ago that flight is not necessarily probative of a suspect's state of mind or consciousness of guilt. Sometimes people run from the police because stuff like this happens. But when they run, unfortunately, the police will jump in. And here's the bad training part.
Yeah.
At some point when this happens, when we do training here, we do what we call the tap-out method. The officer that initiated, the officer that started the chase, somebody should tap him on the shoulder, let him step back, let him regain himself. You need a pattern interrupter to get him out, and cooler heads should have prevailed. That never happened. So when one officer started to beat and started the beating, it became like a wolf pack and a mob mentality, and that should be stopped. Because remember, the police have a duty to intervene. Every single officer that was present, whether or not they inflicted any blows, they're criminally liable now because they didn't stop the beating.
Dr. Lorenzo Boyd, the guest from the University of New Haven. So that was going to be my next question, doctor. Thank you for leading into that. So I would imagine when this gets to trial, if it gets to trial, they may take a plea. Who knows? But I am sure the prosecutor, the DA there, is going to point to these officers, you know, much the way they did in the George Floyd case and say, hey, did any of you think that this was excessive? Why didn't any of you jump in and say, oh, take it easy, man. We got him. What are you doing here? Take a breath.
And after the beating was over, for 7 minutes, I showed the video in my class just last night. For 7 minutes, the officers kind of walked in a circle around Tyree, justifying the beating, convincing other officers why they did it. And at one point, an officer said, well, he touched my gun. And then two other officers, yeah, I saw that. So there's this internal justification that happens afterwards that has it's totally devoid of reality. But once the emotion stops, then rationale comes in, and then it's, okay, well, we have to justify what we just did, and clearly there's absolutely no justification for this.
And sadly, Dr. Boyd, as we speak right now, there are interactions between white officers and black citizens and black officers and white citizens, and 99.999% of those interactions are not going to result in this. Yet, this is, as we are in free society with our free press, this is all over the place, and it just puts a black mark on the entire profession. Whether we like it or not, it certainly does.
Absolutely. There are over 800,000 police officers in this country, and I would argue that the vast majority of them put on their uniform every day and actually try to do a good job. And unfortunately, things like this certainly puts a black eye on the profession. And somebody once told me that nobody hates a bad cop worse than a good cop. Mm. But then the next logical question is, why then are the good cops not weeding out the bad cops from their ranks?
We see, and it's also odd too, Dr. Boyd, that you know, there hasn't been a whole lot talked about the backgrounds of these five former officers. One, I guess it came out today, had a couple of minor infractions that the department didn't think was bad. And now one was, you may have read this, disciplined when he was a prison guard a few years ago. anything about the recruitment here? Does the prison guard thing maybe raise a red flag? Because you and I have both known corrections officers, and that's a whole different world once you're in jail.
You know, I don't think it's the recruitment as much. We certainly should tighten up the recruitment process. But part of it is the way police are trained in this country. And the Memphis police chief, C.J. Davis, has said many times for the last several years, we need national standards for policing, particularly with the use of force. And absent that, we haven't changed the way we train police very much in the last 100 years. And it's still the aggressive us versus them crime suppression. 90% of policing is reactive. We haven't moved very much towards a proactive means of community engagement. And that's what's needed here, because that's going to stop this behavior. And the fact that these five officers continue to do what they did while they were wearing body cams tells me that they didn't think that they were going to be penalized, which says that there may be a history of something else going on.
And thank God for the body cam, right, Dr. Boyd?
Had this been
30 or 40 years ago, this probably would have been swept under the rug. He died of something else once he got to the hospital.
Right, exactly. We should rethink the way we view policing in general, because police are hamstrung a lot because we ask the police to do a really hard job, but we don't give them the support to do the stuff that they need to do. A lot of police officers are overwhelmed. A lot of police officers, are just mentally challenged because of the work that they have to do. We have to do something to help them, and we also have to find out who these bad officers are and get them out of policing altogether.
Dr. Lorenzo Boyd, University of New Haven, professor in criminal justice. Dr. Boyd, thank you, and undoubtedly we'll check back with you as this case proceeds. Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Paul. Take care.
Thank you, Dr. Lorenzo Boyd there from the University of New Haven, former law enforcement officer himself, I believe. Now, people have asked me over the years, hey, you should run for the state house, and state said it couldn't do it, can't do it, wouldn't be prudent. I would last 10 minutes up there in Hartford. I have zero tolerance for people. I can't ask for people to fundraise. But there are people in this business who, unlike me, are actually nice and personable and go to a higher calling of government and lead the exciting world of radio. And the last time I was in the same room with this gentleman, I think I just did the math, was 28 years ago, back in 1995. You used to hear him right here on WICC and WEB 108. Now, of course, for years, Democratic State Rep Joe Gresko of Stratford. Joe, it's been a while. It's Paul here. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Very good, Paul. Good to hear your voice.
And do you miss the exciting world of radio, Joe? Do you miss getting up at 3 a.m?
No, I do. Even though as I'm getting older, I'm turning into that morning guy, the 3 a.m. is a little bit much.
That's a little too early to be just a morning old guy, huh? Joe, I wanted to have you on, and thanks for your press people hooking me up here. I wanted to have you on because there are a lot of issues coming, and you're chair of the Environment Committee, the General Assembly, and there have been some hot issues in the Environment Committee, and I know there was an initial kind of get-to-know-you session the other day, and immediately the notion of a few things, energy generation, continuing concern about our resources, and of course the bears, that all came to the forefront rather quickly the other day. So you've got a pretty hefty plate ahead of you for this session.
It's a long session, but we're rolling up our sleeves, and we have as far as 30,000 foot view, we have to do something with our municipal solid waste from the other part of the state, because the trash to energy plant up in Hartford closed. There's a push on for extended product responsibility for specific industries who have come forward and said, how can we help municipalities? Like you said, bears, and I'm getting pulled from both sides on this. Those that don't want a bear hunt are adamant about restricting feeding, intentional feeding, and restricting what you can do as far as enticing a bear. And then I have the other side that wants to have a full full-blown hunting season. So, you know, what I try to keep in mind on that is that if this incident in Morris that happened at the end of last year ended worse than it did, then there would be the knee-jerk reaction and it would be open season. So we're trying to craft something with a scalpel going forward. And then you saw the huge Hillendale farm fire out in Lebanon. So we're going to be entertaining the idea of cage-free laying hens, which I believe Hillendale was already moving towards anyway. But what better motivation now than after this fire? And then lastly, environmental justice. So, you know, giving the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection and the Siting Council the ability to say, hey, you want to put what, where in this census tract, in this urban area? No, they have this, you know, one, two, three items already. They have enough. So we got to move it somewhere else. So those are the highlights.
Yeah, Joe, on the trash to energy thing, where do we stand infrastructure policy-wise as compared to the other states? Are we behind the curve here? Are we on top of the curve? Are we riding the curve? Are we ahead of the curve? Where do we stand here on that particular aspect?
In my opinion, we're a little bit behind the curve back, you know, in the when, you know, we were working in radio. The idea was to have these trash to energy plants, which was at the time the state of the art. You burned your garbage and you generated electricity off of it. Well, you know, 40 years later, what waste to energy plants are getting for the energy that they generate is practically nothing. So we have the opportunity to be bold and hopefully go into a different type of technology to handle our waste, and then also explore the idea of diverting produce out of the garbage, food scraps, and like I said, with these EPRs, pull out these bulk items. That's so we can, you know, start doing that.
And certainly, Joe, in a scenario where, like I like to say, we keep putting a bandage over the power problems in this state, when we're going to need to at least look at some way, whether it's power from Hydro-Quebec or doing stuff from the trash to energy plants, we're going to need more power here. And I know these legislative programs are great, but you're going to have to find some way to at least increase the supply here somehow, some way.
Transmission line coming through New York from Hydro-Quebec is in the final stages of getting approved, so that'll be a little bit of a bump. There's talk of extending Millstone's a sunset date from 2031 past that, since, you know, they are providing carbon-free energy. And then, like I said, there's rather than burning, there are other technologies out there, gasification for one. And so we'll be exploring that. But the big one, I think, is we had a pilot program last year, and 20 municipalities reached out to the state and said, yeah, we want to start diverting our food scraps. So I believe we're going to put some more funding into that account, because last time I checked, there was probably 60 total municipalities that were interested in this. So I'm more of the ilk of incentivizing rather than mandating. So,
yeah. And Joe, finally on the bear thing, I don't envy you, Joe, because I don't doubt that you are getting emails and phone calls, you know, one calling you a bear killer, you know, the other, you know, urging you to, hey, side with the sportsman here. I guess, obviously, you want to tell people anything that you folks come up with as far as a bear hunt is going to be limited. It'd probably be by a lottery. I don't think anybody, Joe, is looking to carpet bomb the bear population in Connecticut out of existence here. That's just nuts.
I would agree. And, you know, back in 1995, as you referenced, there was maybe 100 bears in our state. Now it's probably closer to between 1,000 and 1,200, according to estimates. And, you know, they all have territories, so they're expanding into the suburbs. And what I would, you know, I'm hoping for someone to educate me in the possibility of, you know, the habituated bears are the ones that are going to be culled if we go down that road, and not the ones that are minding their own business way up in the woods somewhere. So, but we're going to have a bill. We're going to have a public hearing, and I'm going to brew a pot of coffee.
And, Joe, no matter, and I get frustrated here, and you folks must up there too, no matter how many times the deep scientists, the people at Deep that really know this and say, please, don't put out bird feeders. Make sure you have locking trash cans. Every year, Joe, we see the same thing, and I get calls here, but I like my bird feeders. Okay, so should we be surprised, Joe, that Mother Nature takes over and the bears with their laser-focused senses of smell do what they do?
I agree. So we will have some sort of of intentional and even unintentional feeding. And I'm willing to talk. Well, look, they're all hibernating now. So you want to feed your birds? How about from November to March? and then once they all wake up, you know, you bring it in, because you've seen the videos.
Oh.
The bears are in the backyard, and I put it on Facebook, and they're raiding my bird feeder, and I name the bear. And then 2 weeks later, the bear's in their sun porch saying,
yes,
what's for dinner? So, you know, and then you blame the bear. So it's going to be an interesting dance, this legislation.
Stratford Democratic State Rep. Joe Gresko, former star here at WICC and Weeby 108. Joe, you know, when I take vacation time, come on, you know, you can fill in here, you know. I'll talk to the boss up front, or have you got enough of the radio bug out of your system?
Well, you never say never.
Although I love that. All right. Joe, thanks. Good to talk to you again after a few years. You got the number, so stay in touch.
Will do, Paul. Thank you for the invitation.
You bet. Joe Gresko there, Democratic state rep from Stratford, and previous to him getting into politics statewide and also in the Bridgeport mayor's office, Joe was an award-winning newscaster right here at WICC and Weeby 108.